Hi guys, Kira from Murder and More here. I am the solo host of the True Crime Podcast, where every other Sunday I tell you about a murder, serial killer, or missing person. Murder and More is available to listen to wherever you get your podcasts, including platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castbox, and Stitcher. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder and More, Instagram at Murder and More Pod, and Facebook at Murder and More Podcast. Head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com to find out more.
I'm your host, Paige, and you're listening to Reverie True Crime. Today's episode is about a despicable family annihilator who has been dubbed the Chris Watts of Australia. This episode does contain graphic details and the death of children. Listener discretion is advised. If you're ready, let's begin. John Miles Sharp was born on the 28th of February, 1967, to Valerie Sharp and Miles Sharp. He was born and raised in the countryside of Mornington, which is in the state of Victoria. He also had four sisters who were born before him. John's childhood was pretty ordinary and typical. He leaned on his mom and dad a lot because he had problems socially. He also wasn't the best when it came to his emotions and how to deal with any type of stress. That's not really out of the norm for a lot of kids growing up, trying to find their way and how to deal with things in a healthy manner. There were no signs that could have predicted what he would become. After high school, John started working at State Bank. Then he eventually went to work at another bank called Commonwealth. This is where he met 31-year-old New Zealand native Anna Kemp. She was 4 years older than John. They had fallen head over heels for each other, and in October of 1994, they got married. When they lived together, they moved around a few times in the Melbourne district of Mornington. Anna eventually got pregnant by John, and everyone seemed happy. It was on August 13th of 2002 when she birthed their daughter, Gracie Louise Sharp. Unfortunately, Gracie was born with hip dysplasia. The infant had to wear a brace in order to keep her joints in place for a few months. We can only imagine how a baby was so distressed and uncomfortable, barely being able to sleep because of this brace. It wasn't supposed to be an ongoing problem in her life forever. Since she was having pain and discomfort all of the time, and she had to be tended to a lot, stress and tension started to weigh heavy on the Sharps' marriage. Gracie was finally able to get the brace removed a few months later, but she still had trouble trying to sleep. Anna was having anxiety over it and started to look for a professional to help her and advise her on what to do to make her baby more comfortable. Anna took Gracie to a professional 3 times to try to get her sleeping schedule in order, and Anna could take a break, attempting to calm her nerves. At this time, just like when John was a child, he was still very needy when it came to his parents. He relied on them way too much. He was lacking psychological means to deal with the things that stressed him out in life. Marriage, the arrival of a child, and the change of jobs, from a working bank officer to being self-employed in his conveyancing business. The Sharp family left the house they were living in and moved to another house on 116 Prince Street. John went to shop around at the local store called Sport Philip Marine. He was looking around at spear guns, even though he'd never even used one in his life. He did buy a high-powered one and an extra spear with cash. He'd go into their backyard and he would practice firing the spear gun so he could get used to it and learn how to operate it. It was basically like a little hobby for him. Nobody knows when he bought the spear gun. However, it is known that it was in his possession in February of 2003. In September of 2003, Anna gleefully told John that she found out she was pregnant again. Gracie was a little over a year old now, and this really shocked John because allegedly he had a conversation with Anna telling her that he didn't want any more children. He felt they had their hands full with just Gracie. He wasn't ready for another baby. Unfortunately, after what Anna felt was good news of announcing her pregnancy to John, he started to harbor bitter, angry feelings towards not only her, but the life growing in the womb. On the 19th of March, 2004, one of Anna's girlfriends came over to hang out and ended up spending the night in their new house. This friend said nothing seemed weird or out of sorts between Anna and John, besides some of the stress that they had experienced when baby Gracie was battling her condition. Everything seemed a lot better now. Well, on the 21st of March, John, Anna, and Gracie went to a birthday party for one of their nephews. People at the birthday party said everything seemed fine between Anna and John. There were no signs of stress, bitterness, and they didn't argue at all. Nothing seemed wrong. 2 days later, on the 23rd, however, Anna and John did get into a verbal fight before they went to bed. This is where things get really ugly really fast.
Lock your doors, check under the bed, and turn on a nightlight, because it's time for the scariest stories, history, and conversations ever heard. If you struggle to find a great, scary podcast, listen to Scary Time by Indie Drop-In and explore a new creator every week. They'll be telling you about paranormal, ghosts, monsters, hauntings, creepy places, enchanted objects, aliens, and more. Best of all, if you like the creator, you can follow them for more great content, if you dare. That's Scary Time by Indie Drop-In, wherever you stream your podcasts.
So, John lays there a while, thinking about the months that he had actually fantasized about killing Anna. He gets out of bed, goes to the garage that's in the backyard, and he grabs his spear gun. He's sneakily going back into the house, and while Anna, 5 months pregnant with their son Francis, was still sleeping peacefully, John, only wearing underwear and a shirt, knelt down beside her. He fires the spear only a few centimeters away, and it goes into her left temple. Anna was still breathing, which doesn't go unrecognized by John. He shot a second spear into his pregnant wife's head, which instantly killed her. John threw a few towels over her body, which is not uncommon when people murder others but can't look at what they've done and face it. John went downstairs and was somehow able to rest his head comfortably after what he'd just done and fell asleep on the sofa bed. John recalls, quote, "Anna was asleep in bed and I used the spear and fired it into Anna's head on 2 occasions. That's how she died." End quote. The following morning, he takes Gracie to her child care facility, and when it was time for her to get out of child care, he goes back to pick her up and they get settled in at home. All of a sudden, there's a knock on the door. The TV repairman is there, and John had to make up some lie to get the man out of the house because Anna's dead body was still just right upstairs. After the repairman leaves, John goes upstairs and he's trying to remove the spears from Anna's head until he finally realized he couldn't. So he unscrews the rods from the head of the spears. He then dug a shallow grave in their backyard and buried her body. At some point after Anna died, he went back to the same sports store with Gracie in tow and he buys another spear for the gun. On the 27th of March, 2004, only a few days after Anna's murder, he puts Gracie to bed. He then numbs himself by slamming glass after glass of whiskey and coke for some liquid courage. He drunkenly walks out to the garage to yet again get his spear gun, and he loads it with the new spear that he had just bought not long ago. He goes back inside into Gracie's bedroom and fired the spear into her head. It pierced her skull. As you can imagine, she's in pain. She's screaming at the top of her little lungs. John goes into the bedroom. He grabs the shafts that he had gotten out of Anna's head. He fires two of them into Gracie's head, but she doesn't die. He removed one of the spears and fired yet again. This fourth and final spear killed little Gracie. Reportedly, John even put a towel over his face while he was removing the spears from her head, because again, he couldn't face what he had done. For days, he knew he was going to do this, completely premeditated. He admitted that he knew right after he killed Anna that he had to kill 20-month-year-old Gracie as well. The next morning, he goes into Gracie's room and removes the spears from her head. He wraps her up in garbage bags and a tarp, wraps all of that in duct tape, and puts her in the vehicle to rid her body at a Mornington transfer station. After he did that, he got rid of the spear gun, the spears, some of Gracie's toys, and her clothes. On the 29th of March, John goes to Bunnings Warehouse, which is a local hardware store located in Frankston. There, he purchased a roll of duct tape, two tarps, and an electric chainsaw. On the 30th, he dug up Anna and dismembered her body into three parts with that chainsaw. He wrapped her dismembered corpse into a tarp and took her remains to the waste collection bins at the Mornington transfer station to get rid of her and the chainsaw. He also got rid of the blood-soaked mattresses and any evidence that had blood on it. But he wasn't hurting for a mattress because he had actually bought a brand new one 2 weeks before he killed Anna. That day, he decided to write an email to Anna's family from her email account because they'd been trying to get in touch with Anna. Her family was still living in New Zealand at the time and was worried about her because obviously, they haven't heard from her in a long while. He wrote them as Anna to say that she was pregnant by another man and had run away with him to get away from all of the stress that she was going through with John. This only made Anna's family feel even more uneasy. They reported her missing to the Dunedin, New Zealand police. John emailed Anna's family to tell them from his own account that she was fine and he expected her on Sunday to come pick Gracie up. Now, John told the police that Anna took Gracie and had moved to Chelsea, which is a Melbourne suburb close by. On top of all of the lies, he went on to send flowers to Anna's mother on her birthday, and the flowers were in Anna's name, as if they were sent by her. In May of 2004, John was now doing interviews with many media outlets. He was on television talking about Anna and Gracie's disappearances. He even said, quote, "Anna, our marriage may be over, but I still love you, and you are the mother of our beautiful daughter Gracie, whom we both adore more than anyone else," end quote. John continued to keep the lies going, saying he had talked to Anna a week prior, and if anyone knew where she was or had any information at all, to please come forward. John was now telling everyone that his pregnant wife took their daughter and ran off with some other man. On the 20th of May, 2004, New Zealand police called for Victoria Police to start investigating the disappearance of Anna and Gracie. That same day, police from Mornington went to the home that the family used to share together, and they questioned John. His story never changed. On the 10th of June, he was questioned again by the Mornington police, but he stuck to his story firmly about Anna leaving on her own on March 23rd. He even wrote a deposition to the police, which promised he had nothing to do with their disappearances. Reports say, after hidden surveillance footage captured John getting rid of convicting evidence in a trash bin at Mount Martha, as well as him recovering a credit card that was concealed in a plastic bag behind a toilet block in Mornington, John was finally detained for murder on the 22nd of June, 2004. The police came to his parents' home, where he was basically hiding out ever since the investigation became public. He was interrogated at the homicide squad on St. Kilda Road. He was interviewed twice. In the first interview, John kept sticking to his story, denying having anything to do with their disappearances. However, after that interview, he talked to his family for a bit, and during the second interview, he confessed to killing them both. John said that he was in an unhappy and miserable marriage, saying Anna was super controlling, had mood swings, and kept him away from seeing his family on many occasions. When these claims came up in court, the prosecutor said, quote, "Whether such claims have any truth or not now matters not at all. Anna cannot deny them. They provide neither justification nor excuse for anything that you have done." But what about killing Gracie? Well, he says that that was out of irrational, bloody madness. He said, quote, "I was sort of in and out of my head all week. I could hear things going through my head. The voices saying, you can't do it. Voices saying, you can do it. You've got to do it. Every option was coming up," end quote. He also said, quote, "I was thinking about taking care of Gracie by myself, and just amongst all this madness, that's when I lost the plot. When you're sort of insane, your mind's all over the place. I had the idea that if I had a few drinks, I might just be crazy enough to go and do it. It's shocking. It's all shocking. I know that it didn't kill Gracie because she started screaming. I thought I was insane," end quote. While John was talking to police about the murders, he said, quote, "You know what you're doing is sort of insane, but there's just this weird part of you that's almost unstoppable or something. You're almost like on automatic pilot sort of thing. I can't really remember much of what I thought of anything. Just apart from the sort of crazy sensation, it was totally emotional. It's crazy. It's a madness. But you sort of felt like there's something inside of you that's just saying do it. And, I mean, you know, it's wrong. It's almost feeling like you can't stop yourself," end quote. When speaking about the dismemberment of Anna, John said, quote, "You know it's ludicrous. It's just like you're in another world," end quote. He also said that it was like a nightmare while he was mutilating her. Forensic psychiatrist Lester Walton said John was battling depression, but was definitely not psychotic. Lester Walton stated, quote, "This is a fairly mad act, but there's no evidence of psychosis. It seems to me he reached a state of desperation where he concluded this was his only option. He then went about it in a fairly methodical way," end quote. Also, John's family finally comes out and states that John had been a child molester, and it's possible that Anna walked in on John molesting Gracie, which is why he killed her. John has a history that Anna never knew about. John's family never told Anna that he was a pedophile. 20 years before he murdered Anna and Gracie, he had committed sex crimes on young members of his family and friends. One of his victims was a female he sexually abused for 2 years. He stopped doing that to her when he was 18, according to some of his family. The victim is haunted by everything that he did to her. She also puts blame on herself, saying that if she would have reported him a long time ago, maybe he wouldn't have murdered Anna and Gracie. It's only speculation that this was brought to the interrogation and was a part of getting him to confess. But some believe it was only all of the evidence that was brought to the table as well that got him to admit everything. Over the course of a few weeks in June and July, there was a widespread search of a landfill site on the Mornington Peninsula. This is where the Mornington Transfer Station dumps its waste, and the whole site was investigated thoroughly by many police officers and other searchers. The remains of Anna and Gracie were discovered, and later a pathology examination at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine took place and did validate John's confession as to how his pregnant wife and 20-month-old daughter died, as well as how he disposed of their bodies. So I found the transcript of the Melbourne Criminal Division, The Queen versus John Miles Sharp, and this is what it says. Quote, "With the respect of the murder of your wife, Anna Kemp, there are significant matters of aggravation. First, there is the question of premeditation, whether you formed an intention to kill her when you bought the spear gun or when you tested it in your backyard sometime before the 23rd of March, as the Crown submitted. You had certainly formed that intention when you went to your garage on the evening of that day, retrieved it, loaded it, and returned to your bedroom. Your killing your wife was no impulsive act of desperation. Secondly, there was the method of carrying out this crime. It was singular in its barbarity. Thirdly, there was the fact that your wife was pregnant. Your act effectively destroyed two lives, not one. Fourthly, there was the desecration of your wife's body, and the manner of its disposal as already described. Fifthly, there was an extensive charade in which you engaged to try to conceal your involvement in this crime. Sixthly, there is the effect that Anna's death and the method of its occurrence has had on those closest to her. Finally, there was some enormous cost to the state of the investigation of the circumstances of Anna's disappearance and the ultimate search for her remains. Against these aggravating factors, you are entitled to have taken into account your previous good character, including your lack of prior convictions and your ultimate confession to this crime, including your plea of guilty, which obviated the necessity for a perhaps lengthy trial, which would have significantly increased the anguish of Anna's family and those others affected by her death. Remorse is an elusive concept. A confession and a plea of guilty will not always denote its existence. They may be as consistent with the existence of a strong Crown case as with repentance. In your case, although your actions during and after the commission of these crimes would tend to suggest a lack of any concern for what you had done, at least until the 22nd of June of last year, Mr. Joblin's assessment that you were well aware of the gravity of your actions indicate the commencement of a contrition process. No doubt in the coming years of the gravity of your actions will weigh more heavily on you. You may reach a state of genuine remorse. It is to be hoped that you do. A positive finding that you have done so yet, however, cannot be made. Finally, your time in prison, especially in the early years of your sentence, is likely to be marked by hostility and even violence from fellow prisoners, which, in turn, is likely to lead to your having to be isolated, thereby making the ordeal of incarceration particularly onerous. With respect to the murder of Gracie, all of the aggravating and mitigating factors referred to are equally applicable except, of course, the fact of your wife's pregnancy. However, there are further significant aggravating factors in Gracie's case which are not present in the case of your wife. Gracie was a defenseless child for whom you had a legal, and, more importantly, a moral responsibility. And whatever your motive for killing Anna might have been, in Gracie's case, it was simply so that your first crime would not be discovered. Having regard to these additional factors, it would have been logically possible to impose different sentences for each of these offenses. However, distinctions at this level of heinousness invite unseemly comparisons which are, in the circumstances, unnecessary. It is the sentence of the court that, on the count of having murdered Anna Marie Kemp, you be imprisoned for the term of your natural life, and on the count of having murdered Gracie Louise Sharp, you be imprisoned for the term of your natural life. It is further ordered that you serve a minimum of 33 years in prison before being eligible for parole. End quote. As far as prison life for John, from what I've read, and to no one's surprise, it hasn't gone too well. He is in protective custody, spending most of his time in isolation because other inmates want to harm him. Anna and Gracie were laid to rest in Green Park Cemetery, Dunedin, New Zealand. Their names on the tombstone say Anna and Gracie Kemp, not Sharp. Gracie's birth and death certificate have both been modified to list the father as unknown. Thank you so much for listening to today's tragic story of the Sharp family murders. Before I get out of here, I want to thank my patrons on patreon.com/reverietruecrime for their support. So a huge shout out to Brandy, Ian, Lorraine, Maggie, Chelsea, Liz, Shayna, Trevor, Melissa, Emily, Denise, Madeline, and Kara. Thank y'all so much for all of your support. Until next time, stay safe and stay healthy. I love ya.